eyeball. 10 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, February 25th. Trailer Park Gigolos will be at Barbecue in Bradshaw.
Tune in each day to hear when your favorite performers are appearing at venues in the WUSB broadcast area, or maybe try out one you haven't heard before. The online version of the concert billboard at WUSB.fm has an upcoming schedule months ahead, so you know what to look forward to.
Good evening. Hey, how's it going? It's WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM. That's over the air. That's radio waves. Hey, listen, it's 6:03 here at Stony Brook, and that means one thing on Tuesday nights. That means it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Good evening. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Listen to that. Doesn't that sound awful? Do that again. With the... Yeah, hear that noise.
Hold on. I gotta be in the right mode. I'm listening
to
the...
Be in the right mode.
Air.
Listen to that. Everybody quiet. That. That's okay. Staticky.
I just turned it up a little bit.
It's too loud.
Okay, I still can't hear myself.
It's too loud.
Unless I'm over here. But that's okay.
Yeah, it's too loud.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring that.
But that noise really annoys me, because that is dirt inside our board that for some reason can't be cleaned, because the geniuses who built it sealed it or something. But every time you turn the volume down on that particular channel, it makes that noise.
Shameful.
I assume the folks at home. Does anybody listen to radio at home anymore?
I'm thinking...
I mean, I listen online at home, but mostly I'm in a car when I'm listening to the radio.
That's true. I think it is the portability of it. It being wireless. Hey, I can hear myself.
Well, you know what? You're not missing much. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm in that kind of a mood.
Wow.
Yeah, but hopefully the folks at home can hear the horrible noise that it makes when we turn down the volume, which I think you should turn down a little more, because I find I'm competing with Philip Glass. Not that it's Philip Glass. It's somebody covering Philip Glass. So there's all kinds of things going on here. It's cold outside, again, still. And I love it. And everybody else is complaining. And, you know, if I can complain, I'm sick of the complaining. I'm sick of hearing people complain about the weather. You know, stop complaining about it. Go someplace else. This is what winter is.
There is the grin and bear it thing, you know. You have to just have that grit about you.
You don't have to grin. You don't have to grin. You can just bear it. Just shut up about it already. It's cold. Single digits. Wow. Get over it. You know what? If we were on Celsius, it would be single digits all the time. And then you wouldn't be complaining as much. Right?
About that unit of measurement?
Well, it would be single-digit temperature. So you wouldn't hear, you know, Dr. Snow, whatever the guy's name is the weather forecaster.
Right.
Saying, oh, it's going to be single digits, you know, wind chill below zero. They won't be able to say that anymore, because anytime it's below freezing, it's below zero. And it just makes a lot more sense. It's what the whole rest of the world uses. And I'm sick of this system, and why do we keep it? I don't understand it. But we have to play by the rules, and we're told that we must say that temperatures will be in the single digits tonight, meaning the single digits Fahrenheit. Lows will be going down to about 3 or something, and there might be some snow. In fact, there is some snow. It's snowing a little bit outside.
Yeah, it is currently a little bit like a light dusting, flurry weather, kind of thing. It's also very cold. There's a lot of ice on the roads. If you're driving around enjoying the portability of radio, well, we're here to tell you that that road you may be driving on is probably got a bit of glaze, some stuff that may be melted in the last 24 hours, so be very, very careful out there.
It didn't melt in the last 24 hours, I'll tell you that. It might have melted in the previous 48 hours, and then turned into ice, but it's been pretty solidly below freezing for the last couple of days, and it's icy. And even if you're walking, be careful, because you could slip. I slipped on the way over here. You saw me in the parking lot. Those kids were laughing.
Saw them laughing. But
it's not funny, because, you know, it's slippery out there, and for some reason, ice is... Why does ice have to be slippery? Why can't it just be hard? I don't understand the logic behind that.
Yes.
You know, there's certain things, nature thinks it out pretty well, and freezing does something. I know snow protects plants and animals in ponds and things like that from the real cold.
Right.
But what does the slipperiness get us? I don't understand that. Someone understands why ice has to be slippery. Please, you know, ice cubes, they don't have to be slippery. There's no reason. They could be not slippery and work just as well. Most things in nature make sense. This doesn't make sense, and it's just been bugging me. Any other comments on the weather?
Well, no, not really. It's fresh in our minds, so we're all able to understand its ramifications and what we're up against and how it's going to impact us. So, it's a continuing thing. Those snowdrifts just get bigger and bigger. We were recognizing in a spot we usually park in that had huge mountains next to it.
Huge mountains, what, 6 feet tall?
Icebergs.
And they're hard. It's not like you can just jump headfirst into them and live to tell about it. They're hard ice mountains and 6 feet tall on either side of where we parked. And I just said yesterday, yeah, this is cool.
It was a moment we just took stock and said, this is pretty impressive. Let's see. How much do you think that weighs?
It all came out of the sky.
It all fell from the heavens.
Not at once, but it could someday if we're not careful. You know, climate change and all, you never know what's going to happen. Here's a story sort of related to the weather, because crazy as it is here in New York, it's crazier up in Massachusetts. And some guy up there has found a way to profit from the several feet of snow in his yard. This is ridiculous. I feel stupid reading this, but he's shipping snow to people in warmer climates for the bargain price of $89 for 6 pounds. Would you pay $89 for 6 pounds of snow?
Is this fluffy, like freshly fallen? What are we talking?
Well, you'd have to call up Kyle Waring of Manchester by the Sea.
For God's sake, it's always got to be a Kyle.
It does. We have names like Manchester by the Sea. I thought that was only in England they did things like that. Manchester by the Sea. Well, we have Croton on the Hudson, so I guess we might have a few towns like that. But Manchester by the Sea, in case you wind up in the other Manchester by the dirt road or something. Anyway, that Kyle got the idea while shoveling snow earlier this winter, because when you shovel snow, you think. And he was thinking, hey, what am I doing this for? How can I make money doing this? How can I make money shoveling snow? Kyle, come on. This is what people do. They make money shoveling snow. You don't have to do more to the snow after you shovel it.
How could I be shoveling money is what he was thinking.
Actually, you know what? It's kind of smart because he's making money twice. If he's shoveling his neighbor's driveway, they're paying him for it. And then he's collecting. I think he can take the snow.
I think that's a closed loop system he's got there.
Do we live in the kind of country where somebody would get upset if you took their snow after you shoveled it off the driveway? I could see that in Texas. But then again, they don't really have snow. They had a little snowstorm. They had what they call an ice storm, which I think was a half an inch accumulation on the ground, which is enough to grind most places to a halt.
Anyway, so
he actually launched a website, shipsnowyo.com. Kyle, you lost all my respects. shipsnowyo.com. Why do you need the yo? What's the point?
I'm struggling to figure out who his clientele would be.
You'll never go broke. Well, just know that there's a lot of people out there that'll buy virtually anything. There is a website where you can ship excrement to somebody anonymously. I am not making this up. I don't know what the website's name is, but it's probably something I can't say over the radio.
Uh-huh.
And what you do is you enter the address you want to send it to, and the next day or in 2 days, depending on what kind of shipping you choose, a little package will show up on someone's doorstep, and when they open it, they'll be horrified, and they won't know who it came from. But they can probably figure it out if you are laughing in their direction.
I have a lot of questions about that, but the scope of this conversation is getting way crazy.
We can test it out next week and report on it. This, you know, we can send it to the station.
I have no interest in sending that to anyone.
Oh, I didn't say you were going to send it. You're going to receive it.
No, thank you. I've got enough of that being filling up various mailboxes and things.
Well, it's just nice to know that you can do things like that. Theoretically.
That sounds like liberty, and it sounds like freedom.
It's in the Constitution that you can do something like that, and that's what we stand for here. Mm. Anyway, can we get back to the guy who's making money off of snow?
Right. So I'm still unclear about his clientele and his marketing strategy.
He has a story. This is what he did at first in the early days. He shipped 16.9-ounce snow-filled bottles for $19.99. So I guess what he did was, he'd take a bottle.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a 500-milliliter bottle.
Yes.
16.9 fluid ounces and filled it with snow.
Right.
But you know what he discovered would happen by the time the snow reached its destination?
The snow would...
Go on. You're not going to get it. Is he packing it
with dry ice or something? No. Snow would melt.
Did you read the story already? Because we're not supposed to show each other the stories we bring in. How would you know that? How did you know that? Yeah, Kyle. Okay, yeah, it melted. Wise guy. Okay. Mr. Science here. So he came up with a new plan, selling 6 pounds at a time. All right? And I don't know why that's a better plan. Basically, he says, even if the snow melts a little by the time it arrives, the package can still make 10 to 15 snowballs? Wait, you're selling this to make snowballs? I thought he was selling this so that people in the West wouldn't have a drought. That's what I thought this was about. He's selling it so people can throw snowballs at each other. Wow. Okay, he's also started offering 10-pound packages for $110, and he says he'll keep selling until people stop ordering. All right, you know, I think this is the dumbest story I've ever read, and it also violates policy by giving prices over the air. I'm sorry about that. It'll never happen again. Weather is causing all kinds of issues. You mentioned driving, Kyle, and it's very important. We were sliding around a little bit before, and yeah, it was funny at the time, but it's scary now when we think back on it. Going sideways on a state road is not a laughing matter.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a lot of people out there relying on you to maintain your lane position and be responsible and responsive and aware and defensive about your drive defensively. Well, I hate that word. Be defensive about your driving.
No.
Have a defensive demeanor your choices while driving. I don't know.
That's about defensive people who drive? Is that
don't be
I
defensive.
Never understood the phrase.
Defensive driving.
I know a lot of defensive people. And I guess they drive, but why do we focus on their defensiveness?
Be offensive in your vigilance.
I try to be offensive whenever possible, and most people tell me it works, the ones who are speaking to me still. Okay, but anyway, on a weather-related issue, this is important because we've had so many collisions and fender benders and things like that.
Yes.
But what happened on the Long Island Expressway a couple of days ago was an off-duty NYPD cop basically one cop wound up he was driving a 2003 Chevrolet Trailblazer East between exits 48 and 49. It's right by the Nassau-Suffolk line. When he hit a patch of ice and struck the center divider, you know, the big concrete thing you never want to hit. So then he got out of his vehicle to assess the damage. And moments later, you know what happened? His Trailblazer was struck by a Toyota pickup truck driven by another off-duty NYPD cop.
That's awesome.
All right? This is significant here. So then this guy gets out of his car and helps him, assess the damage or whatever. Moments later, a third off-duty NYPD officer stopped to help, but wasn't injured. And then after that, somebody else hit all three of their cars, and it never ends. But you know what I get out of this story? There are too many NYPD cops that live in Suffolk County. I mean, look at this. You have one incident, and all of a sudden you have three off-duty NYPD cops heading in the same direction at around the same time who were not traveling together and apparently didn't even know each other. You know, that sort of says something, and it speaks to people who patrol areas not being familiar with the areas. New York City is basically, four counties away, because you have Suffolk, you have Nassau, you have Queens, and then you have Manhattan County. Well, I guess they could be patrolling in Queens. But the point is, you should be more familiar with your neighborhood. You should live in the neighborhood, I think. And people have often complained that NYPD cops live on Long Island or far away, upstate New York, or just aren't really invested in their communities because it's not their communities. And this little fender bender on the LIE kind of proves that. I wonder how many cops at that time are traveling.
Yeah, and the emissions and, I don't know, the efficiency. I can understand, I mean, I guess security, you know, having cops not be living, you know, in the same neighborhood. I've heard of that where it's very common where I'm from that you'd have police officers that would commute. And so in your neighborhood, you'd see officers' cars, their vehicle from way the heck across the state. And you know that they commute or they live in that neighborhood.
Back in my grandparents' day, they lived in Queens. They lived in Sunnyside. And there would be cops that would patrol Sunnyside who weren't from the neighborhood either. They lived in Woodside.
Oh, okay.
That's one neighborhood over, a couple of blocks. But that was about the extent of it. It wasn't like they were coming from 60 miles away doing their shifts and then leaving and complaining about their shifts when they got back home.
Well, I'm the first one to bring up the telecommuting revolution. I mean, I don't know when that was. That was supposed to be here in the 90s. I mean, I don't know. I would hate to commute every day. To be a cop?
Yeah.
60 miles or something? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because you're in a bad mood already when you get there. And then God. you have to patrol the streets and criticize people for the way they do things.
Yeah.
Which is basically what cops do all day long. It's kind of annoying. I saw an interesting article, though, sort of related to this.
Sure. Go ahead.
Which has a headline that might make you do a double take. All right. I think when you say it to most Americans, they say, what a stupid question. The question is, why do we give guns to police officers? Yeah. And I feel a collective rolling of eyes in the audience out there. This was an article that actually ran in our ran in the Washington Post. I think it ran in Newsday as well. Yeah, it ran on Newsday and the Washington Post. I guess the Washington Post wrote it and Newsday copied it or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, in the United States, it seems obvious that police officers carry guns and are allowed to use them. But in other places, this would be considered a provocation and a violation of law. In Britain, yes. Ireland, Norway, Iceland, New Zealand, officers are unarmed when they are on patrol. Police are only equipped with firearms in special circumstances. It's a strategy that seems to work surprisingly well for these countries. Police officers there have saved lives exactly because they were unable to shoot. The practice is rooted in tradition and the belief that arming the police with guns engenders more gun violence than it prevents. Now, it kind of speaks to the whole argument against guns in the first place.
Right.
In that you have more of them and it just leads to more violence. We saw that in the last week. Did you hear about that story in Las Vegas where there was a road rage incident? Some woman was driving with her daughter, teaching her how to drive, and there was some kind of incident with somebody passing or honking or something like that, and words were exchanged. And then the story keeps changing. I don't really understand why the story keeps changing, but apparently what happened was the woman went home, got her son to come with her and bring his gun. They went out looking for the guy that yelled something at them, found the guy, and then the guy started chasing them. And then they had a whole big gunfight at the OK Corral right there in Las Vegas where shots were fired all throughout the streets. And in the end, the woman was killed as a result of this. And then it later turns out, days later when they caught the guy, that she apparently knew him. I don't know why it took days if she knew him, but I think they haven't been releasing all the information that the police would have liked to have known about this particular case. But it just shows that when you inject something into the equation, when you go out gunning for people, they're going to gun back, and you basically have this little arms race that's happening. The propaganda you've heard over the years about how an armed society is a safe society is nonsense. It doesn't do any good, and you can interpret the Constitution any way you wish, but that's not the effect that we're seeing. And if you continue to argue that it does make us safer, it's like saying the Earth is flat at this point, because the evidence is just so strongly against it that I don't think we can even have a conversation anymore. Now, we can say, does the Constitution need to be revised? Is it perfect the way it is, et cetera, et cetera? That's a different conversation. But one thing I think we all have to come to terms with is that we have a serious problem in this country, and it's not getting any better. Yesterday, there were three different shootings in three different states. It doesn't even make the papers anymore. And when I say shootings, I don't mean just, you know, I don't like you, bang, you're dead. I mean somebody taking over a store and shooting four people or something like that. Happened in three different places yesterday. We live in a very sick society. The rest of the world, there are problems in many parts of the rest of the world, but there are also places where they're getting it right. And they're doing things like having police not be as forceful, military, as provocative, I guess, and causing more violence. We need to look at these things. We need to realize, kind of like what Obama says in his America-hating way, that we're not perfect and we can improve. Now, of course, I say that with tongue in cheek, but that's basically the kinds of things that the right wing is saying about whenever he says anything critical.
Of course. Yeah, I actually really like this. I think that it's the insulating, it's a layer, a distancing that happens. And I think patrol cars are very much the same way. You get a lot less actual policing because basically these guys are like living in patrol cars. They don't get out. They don't actually interact with the neighborhood. It would be cool to see local and maybe even small city police forces take on other layers of policing that involve this, like maybe not being armed as a default, and maybe not just sitting in a patrol car as a default, and maybe any growth they do have in their departments, putting it into non-lethal force and more defensive things like body armor or like street patrolling, like what you were talking about. Historically, yeah. Like in England, they have a lot of that.
And I think no place is a better example than Norway, because you had the horrible massacre by Anders Breivik, killing 77 people. Really, I think the major criticism that most people have about the police response there was the delay, how long it took them to actually respond.
Right.
Not so much that they weren't armed or that not very many of them were armed. And to this day, and this says a lot, this says something about integrity, Norway has not changed their policy, the way they handle this. They have not gone crazy and handed out guns to everybody. They are maintaining their culture the way they want to do that. And whether it's a right-wing extremist or some terrorist of a different sort, they are not going to change who they are. And I think that's important. That's something we don't seem to get, because we've changed so completely in the last 10 or 20 years. It's almost unrecognizable. And we just keep arming ourselves and stepping it up another notch. And I don't know how much worse it can get.
Right. Not having any more intelligent conversations and just having things escalate, not actually working things out with an elevated dialogue, but rather just an arms race.
It's all shrill. Yeah. And you're right. There's no intelligent conversation. I don't know what the dividing line is when you say to somebody, okay, you're an idiot, I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
Right.
Because that does tend to happen a lot. I turn on Fox News because, and I joke about this as we're driving around, I want to hear somebody bash Obama, turn to Fox News, inside of 5 seconds they've bashed Obama.
Yeah, you do this a lot. It's actually really funny.
But unless they're playing a commercial, I always seem to get it. And okay, you know, it's amusing, it's fun, but it's not real. It's not logical. It's basically, no matter what he says, they hate him for it. And it's absurd. It's absurd, and you have to stop taking it seriously.
It's a din of background, a pervasive insulation just a swirl of noise. I see it as static, really, right? I mean, wasn't that a word in like the 70s, the 80s? Yo, don't give me any static. You know, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah, totally.
That's all it is. It's just noise, like corporate noise, even like ads. I don't know. I think after a certain number of years, maybe a certain number of college classes, I don't know what it is, but you seem to become, they become more irritating, I think. And the other issues, I think, that aren't brought up, that aren't talked about with these platforms, mm-hmm. whether it's a radio or TV or these like smart devices or the internet, these platforms are great, but you gotta use them. You've gotta really do the work, and that is having that conversation, not just thinking everyone's an idiot and not talking to anybody and everybody just fighting and being defensive.
The conversation is so important, and we don't have that enough. We spend so much time looking to debate fundamental issues.
Right.
I think we've pretty much gotten over the earth being flat. Okay, we're past that, but it's not like we're much past that. Debating climate change is, to me, the biggest waste of time. We should be doing something about it. It's been proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that I can see. I mean, you can talk about the theory of evolution and say, aha, it's a theory, and it's not really proven. There's also a theory of gravity. There's theories of all kinds of things. It's a scientific term. You know, we don't have time to wait while you learn how the language works. But there are certain scientific fundamentals.
The depravity of the telephone company.
That's a given. You can set your watch by that. The point is, we spend so much time just going over the same ground with people because we think that an opposing view is an equal view, and it's not, all right? Facts are facts. Science is science. We need to deal with that and move on and actually progress and get better and build a better world. And it's just we don't seem to be doing that nearly enough. It's so frustrating to have this conversation that just seems to be stymied in one place. You know, people are always talking about – this is another story, by the way, that's sort of related to this. A story you didn't hear about in the mass media.
Okay.
I don't think people heard about it. It was in the mass media, but it should have been front and center. But that's what happened, again, in Norway,
right.
In Oslo.
Oh, I think
1,000 people, 1,000 Muslims surrounded a synagogue.
Surrounded it.
You know what? You start a story like that, and all of a sudden, yeah, you've got Fox News' attention. They formed a ring around the synagogue to protect it, symbolically, to say that they're fed up with attacks, they're fed up with prejudice, they're fed up with hatred. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we need to do more of. Now, this is the thing that the right wing is constantly saying, why don't Muslims stand up and condemn all the attacks that are going on? Well, they do. But when they do, it's not reported. Or when it's reported, It's skewed in such a way to make it seem like it wasn't significant. I saw one right-wing newspaper reporting this saying, well, you know what? They weren't all Muslim. And they actually went into the background of some of the speakers saying, this person said something anti-Semitic once.
Right.
You know, basically trying to tear it down when it's something that is very, very significant. And it's not the only instance of this. And they're going to be doing it again. They're going to be doing something a little bit different. They will be having a peace vigil surrounding a mosque in Oslo. So it's basically a different.
Oh, so it's reciprocation.
Reciprocation, exactly.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
This kind of thing needs to be celebrated, needs to be reported, and it's not as uncommon as you think. But the people who ask the question, how come the Muslim world doesn't take a commanding role in fighting things like ISIL or just Islamic fundamentalism or terrorism or what have you. Look around you, all right, especially those of you on the left, all right? You have a president now who has basically changed a lot, all right? A lot has happened as a result of his initiatives. You see the attacks that he is undergoing relentlessly from the right, so you know it's actually doing something.
You know
the world is changing. You know, he has really pissed them off. And if he wasn't doing anything, they wouldn't be so angry. But look around you. Look at your fellow leftists. Are you backing him up? Are you praising him? No, you're not. Because there are things he's done that annoy you, and you're focusing on those things. Yes, we should focus on the things that he's done that are bad. And there are lots of those. First one to say that. But when you ignore the good things and only focus on the bad things, you empower the people that are opposed to him at all, and they basically wind up running things in the end. It's the same thing. Why can't the leftists – it's ridiculous calling them leftists in this country. But why can't the people supposedly left of center
– more liberal-minded folks.
Yeah, the liberal people. Why can't they get together and fight the conservatives, stand up against them? Because they're too busy fighting each other. Same exact thing is going on in the Mideast. Because you have all different governments, all different allegiances, all fighting each other, not organized, not able to take on a common enemy. Believe me, ISIL is a common enemy of everybody over there. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But getting people to agree, getting people to work together is not easy. It's not easy at all unless you're very simple-minded, and you only have one or two goals, and that's why fundamentalist groups are able to do things so easily, and fundamentalism works in many different ways.
Yeah, I think we should embrace, I think, the messiness of progress, and also step back. I think something we can all do in situations is stepping back, trying to look at the bigger picture, look at our own pitfalls. Where are we easily towing an argument or not, like you said, looking for the virtuous points in maybe what you're brethren are raising mm-hmm. as a part of the issue towards building something, towards building whatever that may be, a radio station, whatever common future we're trying to embrace, peace. You know, there's a lot of different things you could...
You can accomplish so much if you work together, if you band together with people that you agree with on that one particular issue. But so many times I've seen people refuse to work with somebody because, well, they're not leftist enough, or they're the wrong flavor, or all kinds of reasons. I think anybody involved in any organization will recognize this trait. And it's a fatal flaw, because I think it's what has kept this country so conservative over the years. The fact that the people who are opposed to that particular direction uh-huh. wind up fighting each other more than anybody else. And
right.
I see that politically. I see that in all sorts of organizations. And it's I guess the reason it happens is because people are more idealistic, and they think about people they disagree with, rights about people they disagree with, and who's going to defend them, and how do you basically justify a position when this particular person doesn't have a voice? Whereas conservatives are just very monolithic, and my way or the highway, and that's easy to band together, and make that a doctrine. So,
indeed.
All right. What do you think of Giuliani's comments? Now that he's gotten himself back in the news. About Obama not loving the United States.
Apparently, yes, yes. Obama does not love the U.S. I think it is a misinterpretation of the way Obama has been framing the chronology of what has transpired since before he took office, the election, the re-election. I think his discussion, intelligent discussion, speaking of which, I think his dialogue with the American people has been critical, but I don't think it is reflective of a deep personal lack of love. I think it is tough love. How about that?
Tough love?
Yeah.
Well, you know, how can you lead an organization, a country, anything, without wanting to improve it, without seeing where the problems are,
yeah,
and what direction needs to be changed. This is true of any leader, I would think. Otherwise, you can just run the place on autopilot if everything is fine.
No, I'm with that. I'm saying that too. Totally.
Well, you know, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker was one of the people that might be running for president. It's just funny to watch them all. Yeah. Well, you won't be yawning next year because it's going to be pretty scary if these people actually have a chance. And if Hillary Clinton is running, they have a chance, believe me.
Well, I'm scared.
Giuliani can speak for himself, said Governor Scott Walker, because they don't criticize each other. They don't do that either. I'm not going to comment on what the president thinks or not. He can speak for himself as well. I'll tell you, I love America. That's all they care about, is making sure that everybody knows how much they are in love with the country. And it's so pathetic because they don't actually speak about issues that have any political risk whatsoever. They just go to the lowest common denominator. And Giuliani almost word for word is just saying 9/11. Did he say, "I'm the mayor of 9/11? Did he say that? Or did somebody say that when they were criticizing him?
I heard a little bit of that. Yeah, I don't
sure
know
anymore. I can't tell the difference.
I think he checked in during 9/11, but he did not become the mayor of
9/11. Well, he definitely brought up 9/11 in this conversation, and it was completely inappropriate. Now, I went on record right after 9/11 as saying Giuliani was doing a great job, because he was then. That's exactly what we needed. We needed a father figure who was
not President Bush.
Not President Bush. Somebody was actually out there in the streets and not disappearing and being supportive.
Right.
He did a good job then.
I think
he has lost all credibility since then, because he keeps pointing to those horrible events and
but not saying anything. He's just bringing them out like at the convenient moments to make some to come off as authentic, essentially.
Yeah, using it for his own purposes, right. And that's it's shameful. So hopefully, people will see that for what it is. I don't know.
Smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors. What else you got?
I've got a device here that I've just turned on. This is what we got the other day. It was a carbon monoxide detector. No, it's not making that noise. It's counting down right now. It's
okay.
Up to 5, 4. It's going to get to 0 in a second.
Wait, it's counting down.
2, 1, 0.
Isn't that dangerous?
Okay. And then it's supposed to tell you if you have a carbon monoxide leak. I was very disappointed with this because, first of all, when we turned it on, it kept telling us that we were at a level of 355, which is deadly.
Parts per million, yes.
And no matter where we turned the thing on, it would say that. We went outside and turned it on. It said that. So we have a carbon monoxide leak of unmeasurable – well, actually, it was measured – of just phenomenal levels everywhere. And I was freaking out over this. And then I read the instructions. It said – you have to calibrate this, so you have to go to a place where there is definitely no carbon monoxide,
right?
And calibrate it to 0. This is what this thing is supposed to do: is tell you where there's no carbon monoxide. How am I supposed to know without a detector if there's no carbon monoxide? I'm using this to tell me that,
right?
So now I had to guess. Okay, you know what? And it doesn't work. It doesn't work below freezing either. So you can't do it outside where you're pretty sure there's no carbon monoxide. You have to do it inside.
Not right now.
I had to pick a place, a room at random. Say, okay, you know what? I don't think there's carbon monoxide here. So let's just say there isn't.
Right.
And
and
so we set it to 0 there.
Sure.
And everything since has been 0.
It's not really done anything. We were going to put it near an exhaust pipe. I think that's our next plan. But it's really bizarre.
Go out to the parking lot. First of all, we're outside, so it supposedly doesn't
just
work.
Go behind a bus, right?
We're going to go behind a bus and hold this thing up and see if it changes. And if it doesn't change, I'm returning it. I really am.
I definitely think that's what's going to happen. There seems to be a wide variety quality in the market of CO measuring devices. There's some really fancy ones that are combustion measuring devices. There's also just little alarms and meters and things. But
I just
wanted
to know if there was carbon monoxide leaking that would kill people in any place that I would – because you read about this in the newspaper occasionally, carbon monoxide leaks in nursing homes and things like that.
Right.
And we discovered not too long ago that smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors – stop working after a while, but they don't tell you they're not working. They keep flashing.
All carbon monoxide sensors are – they use a sensor that is chemical and does expire. So
okay.
That's part of measuring CO. No,
all
I'm serious.
All I ask is that when it expires, it emits a sound saying, by the way, I'm no longer any good. Stop putting batteries in me. And, it continues flashing its light, telling you it's working, but it's not actually working. This is why people die from these things, because the equipment sucks.
I heard, actually, that I was reading up on some of this. I heard in the standard for CO alarms, there's a 30-day delay on anything that breaks the 30 parts per million level. So you could have it, and you might not detect it. I also read that if it's over another threshold, it's like an hour delay.
Wait,
so they're it's not like real-time measurement.
You're saying if it breaks a particular barrier, it waits 30 days to tell you?
Yeah. There was some of that I was reading on the internet about it.
Why would it wait 30 days to tell you that you have a carbon monoxide leak?
It's part of the detector code. It's allowable, but it won't tell you if there's a constant background of it. So that was kind of interesting. It's a really weird thing. You can't measure it. We want to measure it and look at small changes, just like...
Well, the other thing about this that really annoyed me, after 15 minutes of inactivity, it turns off.
Right, right, right.
Which means it does nothing. Unless you're walking around where someone already has succumbed to carbon monoxide poisoning and you're trying to find where it was. Okay, it's useful for that. I wanted to get this to find out if there was a leak and... To basically detect it if one should happen.
Right.
And if I have to basically get it within 15 minutes or I'm not going to get anything.
Right.
This was fantastically expensive to get this particular device, and it's just not doing what I want it to do. So I'm going to bring it somewhere and complain.
Yes, I think we'll throw it back through the store window and research some other measurement stuff. There's all kinds of ways you can do it, too. There's little kits. There's little components. You can buy a CO sensor component. I think it's, like, really cheap, under $10.
You were telling me about that.
So yeah, yeah.
Arduino or something.
Yeah, you could set it up with a microcontroller, and I think you buy a CO breadboard, and then you can buy the actual sensor as a component, because, of course, it expires after a year or two, so you need to put fresh ones in. But you'd have to design a whole bit of code or borrow some code and customize it, and that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
Not that we lack projects or anything.
Well, we have been doing a lot of work. In fact, you've been. I want to tell people this. You were working on getting a Windows 3.1 machine booting up before, and you might have actually succeeded in doing this.
I might have. I had a couple epiphanies along the way. It's just something that was sitting around, and then we backed up a lot of the files that were on the drive.
These are critical files, by the way.
I'm not going to get into the details because we want to release. If we can do it, it'll be really cool.
Putting critical files on the Windows 3.1 machine, but we did that.
Well, it's again being locked into certain devices and software. Suffice to say, though, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying the files that were on there, all kidding aside, were voicemail files that we had for many years ago. I don't know if people remember this. Many years ago, we had something called a Voice BBS. BBS being bulletin board system, and people would leave audio messages that were designed for the hacker community, and people would call in and listen. It was like calling a computer bulletin board system without the computer. Well, there was a computer, but it was completely through telephones as well. Now, there is no software anywhere that will convert the patented audio format that this particular system used into something that we can play today.
Yes.
We even contacted the person who wrote the software, and he can't do it.
Yeah, he wrote us back.
He can't convert it to anything.
Nothing.
So basically, you have, through high tech, you have a way of making something completely incompatible and defunct.
Well, he was protecting obviously protecting his stuff. And yeah, and now it's defunct because he's relegated to obscurity, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so protected that it never caught on, and it was his, you know, vertically integrated product that now nobody uses, and
this can happen with pictures. This can happen with film videos.
Right.
It can happen with audio. It can happen with word processing files. If we don't think this through, we can lose access to all sorts of things. I guarantee you, Homer's Odyssey would not be around today if the computer age had struck way back then, because somebody would have converted it to something else and then would have forgotten about it, and nobody would be able to read it 100 years later. We're having trouble reading things from 10 years ago, so it's not going to last a millennia, that's for damn sure. So the thought is that if you're able to figure this out, we can run the software again, and then running the software, we'll play it, and then we can figure out how to pipe it into something else, right?
That would be the reason for this existing in an on state. I mean, if it's worth the energy, and that's the thing, is it sat around long enough, and there's a couple other cool things I'm doing that, so anyway, I pick up and put down things as I can, and there was a power supply issue, and the old power supply used a particular type of switch and connector to the motherboard. And this motherboard actually has Molex and the other type of motherboard power, like from an older type. So I was able to look at it long enough and say, huh, maybe I can put a modern power supply on it. Well, then I didn't have the switch, so I had to look at the jumpers and stuff, and I rerouted the reset switch. So I actually got it to boot. And then since we had pulled files, I have to change the jumpers on the back of the drive and switch it back to master because it was in slave. And anyway, it might boot up and we might have a working machine. And if you understand any of that,
we just had a tour group come through watching you pontificate on this and seeing you brainstorm. A whole Cub Scout troop just went by. It's incredible watching the mind work. But this is what hackers do. They figure things out like this, and they make things work out of nothing. You may ask, what good is a machine like that? It's so old and antiquated. Well, that's the romance of it. That's what makes it a beautiful thing that needs to be brought back from the dead. And you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah, yeah. And in this case, it was these really old voicemail cards that go with the software. And if, you know, I don't have a motherboard that supports those anymore, and I'm working my way back from the power supply, which also the reason the power supply failed is because it had a fuse that was soldered on that had blown. And so I removed that, and then getting down to the motherboard connections, and then finding a different solution for a power switch. And then now in its state, I'm going to fix a couple fans, and I'll maybe get that drive to boot. But in that, after that, then maybe we would hook it up to an audio board, much like the equipment you have in the station, and we would do run through the files in their software and try to record them into waves and stuff.
And this is only one project. We have our old Z100 computer that our friends over at March, the retro computing people, are trying to restore. The one that an actual real mouse lived in.
Yes.
Because we opened it up and there was a mouse nest inside the computer. This is a computer that doesn't support a mouse, by the way. Anyway, enough preamble. What do you want to talk about tonight, Kyle?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that machine actually got hit by lightning. There's a long story about that. I've been going back and forth with them talking about they want to either swap out the motherboard.
About us.
And I'm also trying to charge an AGM battery, if you know anything about those. Those are difficult, especially in cold weather. I've been reading about cold weather batteries. I'm also working on a WS2801 LED RGB strip. They're a three-channel RGB.
Slow him down a little bit.
They're 12-volt, and so I could use it with a battery.
I was afraid
this
was going to happen. We have a show tonight. We have a lot of things to talk about, and I want to bring the listeners in because, well, it's off the wall, and that means that it's in... What's that? Is that our outro?
I'm afraid we're done.
Did we do it again?
This is the outro.
Talk about loud. Well, I'm sorry, folks. We talked for the whole hour again. But
we did so much to talk about. I would love to elaborate on all these.
You can write us an email. How about that? That's something.
Please. Yeah, please write us an email. We have a working mail mail technology. So OTW at 2600.com.
OTW, of course, standing for off the wall. OTW at 2600.com. If people still write, hopefully they do. And maybe we'll read it next week.
I love this song. This is Gigi Agostino.
From
and
Italy.
You recorded this over the air, over FM.
Well, no, actually, I recorded something similar over the air, and then I bought the album.
So here, this is the album. Enjoy. Good night, everybody. Good night.